everybody. Bob Claster here. Claster's the name, comedy's the game, and I'm here for another edition of Funny Stuff. 2 weeks ago, we heard highlights from the first Comic Relief show, and now it's time to listen to highlights from Comic Relief 87, which is now known as Comic Relief 2, which took place on November 14th, 1987. And these records are particularly welcome because they give us an opportunity to play comedy by comedians that, at least so far, have not made records for the most part. And so we'll be listening to work by, Bobcat Goldthwait has a record out. But Louis Anderson, Paul Reiser, Stephen Wright, Richard Lewis, maybe a little Robin Williams, and maybe little Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. Who, by the way, will be featured for the next 3 weeks, but I'll tell you about that at the end of the show. A Comic Relief is a project which was designed to raise some money for the homeless, and if you're interested in that, you can call 1-800-528-1000. That's 1-800-528-1000, and pitch in for the homeless. Got some special stuff to tell you about, which I will tell you about at the end of the show, so let's press right on with highlights from Comic Relief, and we'll start off with a very funny guy, Richard Lewis.
I just broke up with somebody, and you know something? I hope you're in love. I hope you feel good about yourself. I broke up. You know, this woman, you know, I felt, well, she wasn't into me. You know, I would say, I love you, I adore you, I worship you, and she said to me, ain't that a kick in the head? That's not enough for me. Now she's bad-mouthing me, forget about it. She's telling all our friends that she had to fake foreplay, you know, and that I gave her an anti-climax. I'm not excited about that. So now I can't go out anymore. I'm screwed up. I have to go to a penis awareness clinic now. And when it's over, it's over. Man, it's over. I should know it. I just, you know, we'd get into bed. Sex went south, you know. I would get into bed. She would mentally dress me, you know, which was a sad thing. She came into bed at night wearing turtleneck lingerie. I wasn't thrilled about that. She put an armrest in the middle of the bed. I knew, like, it was like, forget about it, you know. I was lying in bed. I have such low self-esteem. I would fantasize that I was someone else. I'm not happy about that, you know. You know, if sex goes south, if you're in love now, look, you can't always be on a peak, you know? You gotta dip, but when you start making up games like, okay, tonight, I'm gonna be the caterer, you be the insurance woman, you know, and it's no good. I had to come in bed, I wore the Chef Boyardee hat with a spatula, you know, it just... You know, I was afraid of having unwanted children. Look, children are the greatest things, I think. I have no idea. I mean, I'm not married, but I'll tell you right now, if I had, like, quadruplets by mistake, I'd be freaked out. I couldn't even give them their own names. I go, modern heirs, dinner. I would just call them in like that. She wouldn't use anything. And yet, women, they got the shaft. You all did. It's unfair, you know? These contraptions, like, these new things, like, from France, Laquette's mitt, you know, things like that. She didn't use anything. She threw salt over her shoulders before we made love, you know? Now I'm going out now. I'm frightened. I'm a hypochondriac, you know? Look, I love women. I'm not a sexist by any stretch of the imagination. And yet, is this mean? I went out with a new woman. I went, look, don't take this wrong. I love you very much. And yet, before we make love, can we just boil ourselves before we get into bed? And I broke out in a rash. Look, I hate rashes. You hate rashes. Who likes rashes, you know? The Rashettes, they play Vegas, the lounge act, they like rashes, but yeah, a little Louis Pasteur thing. I said, you know, you said you weren't screwing around, I'm not screwing around. I said, well, who was? I gotta know, just tell me who it is. And she narrowed it down to someone in Circus Vargas. That's what she told me. I don't have any time. I have no time for you liking me. It's sort of a sad thing here, but... masturbation, right now, I'm too... I don't even do it anymore. I'm afraid I might give myself something, quite frankly. I lie in bed, it's a sad thing. I lie in bed and I go, Richard, can't you just be friends with yourself? It's sort of a sad thing. I'm just not hot, I can't feel good. You know, I never felt good sexually in bed. I had a bad upbringing, I just don't know. I just feel, you know, performing in bed is just, I can't. When I make love, when I have an orgasm, I give away family secrets. I'm not thrilled about that. I go, hey, my family had a coal mine in Wyoming, oh my God, I mean. I have bad knees, I'm not in shape, you know, and I read The Joy of Sex, you know, I read the little book, I was a little embarrassed, you know, position 29A, you're in bed, your wife's holding a wok, you know, when she comes in. I can't do it. If I ever have a sex manual by my name, I'd call it, ow, you're on my hair. That's what I would call it. I want to be able to be me. I want to lie in bed and make love and go, ah! I want to be, I can't talk. I can't make love. I can't make love and be intimate at the same time. It's a big problem for a lot of men. And women, I'm sure, too. And puppets. I'm sure puppets have problems like this, too. When I make love, I mean, I need sex puppets. Hi, I'm very in touch with my feelings. Hope you like me very much. I can't make love. No, I can't say I love you. I have to have, like, hi, Hans Brinker loves little Thumbelina. I can't talk. Or I become Jerry Lewis. I go, I really love how I'm in that. I can't talk. I want to be Barry White or Al Jarreau. I want to lie in bed and go, huh, I love you. Ah, you are everything to me. Ah, you are my life. You are my soul. And as soon as I have an orgasm, I go, hey, any more frozen waffles in the freezer? It's not fair. It's not fair. I want to be me. She called me by a pet name. Pet names are supposed to be an endearment, whatever that means. All I know is she went, take me, lick me, want me. And then all of a sudden, little goober, she called me little goober. I don't want to be little goober. Didn't it become little goober? You know, oh my God. And I blame my parents. I blame my parents. They meant well. They covered up their orgasms. They were like, it was like Watergate. It was like Nixon time. In fact, they couldn't show joy. I used to put like a microscope and an ear thing, like Louis Pasteur by the door there. And my father would start squealing and then he would cover it up. He would go, that's gin. He would say, that's gin. I got to get off. Please give money. Thank you very much.
It is an enormous honor and a privilege to be here tonight, and I sincerely believe that. Before I get started, you know what? I want to talk to you about something. This year, there seems to be like, have you guys been following this? This year, there's been about a billion airplane crashes lately. And everybody seems so confused. Everyone's going, God, how come there's so many airplane crashes lately? How come there's so many airplane crashes? Well, I got a theory. Do you remember like around 4 or 5 years ago, the air traffic controllers, you know, the guys who land the planes? They went on strike. And then our president, Ronald Reagan, he fired all the guys who were on strike. And now everyone's going, God, how come there's so many plane crashes lately? How come there's so many plane crashes? I don't know, maybe because Walt the janitor is not qualified to land a Boeing 707. Homelessness, Nicaragua, you know. I mean, I really can't blame Ronald Reagan for the way things are today, you know, because, I don't know, like, blaming Ronald Reagan for the way things are is kind of like blaming Ronald McDonald when you get a bad cheeseburger. Neither of them run the company. What is new? I gotta hurry up. Let me see what's new. Me and my bride, since last Comic Relief, we pounded out a daughter. Yeah. It's kind of extremely sensitive way to say you had a child. We pounded out one, and my bride and myself, I have to call her my bride. Calling her my wife, you know, wife sounds like I bought her for some goats. Yeah. Seen my wife. Honey, show them your teeth. I'll tell you what kind of self-centered jerk I am. I'm like, oh, Mr. Goldthwait, we're gonna have to perform a C-section. Now, a C-section's when they just pull the baby out through the belly. And they go, Mr. Goldthwait, we're gonna have to perform a C-section. And instead of like going, oh my God, I hope everything's okay, in my mind I went, oh great, I went to Lamaze for nothing. My baby, when she came out of that belly, she was beautiful and she smiled. Most babies are really ugly when they're born, but my baby, because she didn't have to go, you know, she didn't, you know, most babies, they get their head, you know. You know, they go through that Play-Doh fun factory of life. You know. My baby was this little, beautiful little pretty baby. And so I'm still there. And the doctor goes, Mr. Goldthwait, would you like to cut the cord? And I really said this. I said, isn't there anyone a little more qualified? Like in an operating room, you're gonna go, no, not him. Let's give him the sharp thing around the newborn. Would you like to cut the cord? Yeah, I'll cut the cord if you knock like $200 off the bill. So we haggled. I don't know, I thought we were done with this whole Iran-Contra thing, but I read in the paper the other day where this pilot, this guy claims that he flew a jet with 12 tons of pot. He flew it and he landed this jet in a Miami Air Force base. Did you read that? And then they sold the pot and then they gave the money to the Contras, right? And I'm like, oh wait, let me get this straight. The guy flew pot into an Air Force base? When I try to get back from Miami with like three of my dirtbag friends in a Volkswagen. I try to go any border. It's like, you know, it's like body cavity searches and stuff. But this guy just gets to land the pot right on a base. And I don't know. Bernard Getz, do you follow him? Subway vigilante? Are you applauding him? Man scares the hell out of me. He shot these guys. Bernard Getz shot four guys because they were robbing him with a screwdriver. I mean, I've done a lot of stupid things in my life, but I never tried to rob anyone with a tool. Like, what were these guys thinking? It was like, let me see, what would really instill fear in the general public? Pliers? No, so... they get the screwdriver, and it's like, you know, Getz had been carrying this gun going, one of these days, man. One of these days! And these guys come up and they go, give me all your money, man. Give me all your money. And he goes, give me all your money. Give me all your money or I'm gonna make your glasses really, really wobbly.
Thank you very much. Any trouble parking out there? I always think of my dad in those situations, because my dad, he just didn't like people. It was very clear, too. He didn't say much. He'd just look at the person and go, look at him. He loved his car, too. He'd introduce it to people. It's my Bonneville. It's an American-made car. Could drive it head onto a train and live. You want to try that, Dad? The 715's coming around the bend. Don't get smart with me. That was my favorite thing my dad said. Don't get smart with me. Just once I wanted to go, huh? Getting the car was a big deal when I was a kid. Hey, Dad, can we use the Bonneville? Take the Rambler. It's got a pink door. Come on, Dad, you'd have to plan and scheme. Dad, I raked the lawn, I cleaned the garage, I built that addition. You have to lie, too. Where are you going? Around the block. How many kids are gone? Half a kid. You give me those keys, I always give you that lecture with it. Now I'm not giving you this car so you can screw it up. Well, then I don't want it. You get that car, you get your friends, you get 300 people. I gotta go. You turn into your dad, too. Don't smoke dope in here! My dad's a musician, he'll know. You're driving that car, you get so goofy, then you hit that tractor. You didn't even know you were in a field, did you? All your friends leave. Good luck, Lou. See ya. And that guy comes out from the station, you know that guy always named Smitty? It's your dad's Bonneville? What'd you do, hit a train? Listen, Louie, I know your dad. Why don't you go in and lay under the hoist? I'll crush your legs. For a minute, you go, that's not bad. He pulls it away from the fender. You drive it home with it scraping on the wheel. You get in front of the house, your dad's in the rocking chair in the window. Those scenes from Psycho flashes in your face. You park the smash side away from the house. Thinking that in the middle of the night, Dean Jones will come out and put flubber in there. You walk in the house, throw the keys on the table. Why not? They're of no use anymore. You're home all early. You better not have screwed up that car. You won't be driving it anymore. You won't be driving it anymore either. I was always surprised that my dad really reacted. You know, it was like, I thought I was going to get killed. And he goes, well, that's all right. How do you think that pink door got on the Rambler? Anyways, we're going to work on that together. We're going to fix it. You and I, every Saturday, every minute of your free time, we're going to work on that car. Couldn't I just make payments or something? I never wanted to work on the car with my dad. I never planned on being a mechanic. I didn't know tools or anything. You know, he'd jack the car up and lay underneath it. You'd have to hand him tools. Give me that 9/16th wrench. Here, take them all. The only fun is when you're underneath there and he'd hit his knuckle on something. Got it! That tool would come flying out. It's a 9/16th, look out! Then he would blame you. Get out of my light! And you'd look down at that jack and you'd think, college or prison? Please call in. Thank you very much.
I have things to do. It's very important in life to have things to do. That's why everybody wants things to do. That's why we make lists all the time. Things to do. You want to feel like that's why you get out of bed in the morning. What are you getting up so early? I have things to do. Okay. What kind of things? It's 6 o'clock. I have a lot of things. I have a list and everything. I have things to do. Some people even have stationery that says, comes printed on, things to do. I don't need that. You know what I mean? If I see a piece of paper on my desk that says, call the plumber, I know it's something I have to do. You know what I mean? I'm not going to write down something I don't want to do. There are many things I don't want to do. I don't have to write it down. I don't write down. Don't slam your knee against the dresser drawer. I remember that. Don't eat a piece of melon that's so soft you don't enjoy it. I won't. I know that. So you start writing small things, the stupid things that you're going to forget. You know, call the cable guy. You know, the annoying things. Buy envelopes. Buy a bulb for the bathroom. And for that day, that's your purpose in life. Buy a bulb. That's your life. Of course, there are larger things with your life. There's a larger purposes that we have in our life. We just don't have to write those down. You know, nobody jots down on the refrigerator, work towards world peace. I'll remember. You know what I mean? Leave the world better than you found it and pick up some milk. You know, you don't have to write these down. But you need things to do. Today, I woke up early. I had a lot of things to do. So I'm in the house. I'm doing things. All right? I'm doing things. My girlfriend is on the other side of the house. She's doing her things. Now, she yells. She just shouts something through four rooms. Now, there's a rule. I didn't realize this till we moved in together. When you yell, when you live with somebody, there's a rule called the one repetition rule. People, I don't know when this evolved, but it's a rule of life. People repeat things one time, and then you're on your own. Through four walls. She goes, honey, when you get a chance, see if the thing is happening. What? When you get a chance, see if the thing is happening. What? Nothing. It's nothing. What happened? Where did it go? It was something. What? Something. What? Nothing at all. It's all over. I feel like if it's not important, don't tell me. And if it is important, keep telling me till I get it. That's all I'm asking. It's one of those things. When you live together, it happens. There are a lot of good things that come, a lot of great things that are living together. The best, but one of the best, you become, once you're comfortable with each other as a couple, you get really good at going to a crowded theater and finding seats. This is something, you have to be a good couple. Because, you know, you go like Friday night, you Saturday night, there's a line around the block. You just kind of get in there. You're in the mood. There's no time to do anything. It's a military operation. Basically, one of you gets on the ticket buyer's line. The other one goes, park the car. You go, honey, I'm going to double time over to the ticket holder's line. I'll be over there, okay? Now, at exactly 07:50, those doors open. The line starts moving. If the line moves, I got to go with them. I'm a dead man, honey. I'm a dead man. Meet me at the door. I have no tickets. I can't. Come on, honey. Meet me at the door. And that's why you see couples who don't know each other, they never get in. They're going, well, let's go get tickets together. They're never going to get in. You have to split it up. When are you going to learn? Split it up. There's no romance. Look, tomorrow we'll kiss. Tonight we're going to the movies. You just got to work it out. You got it. Then you get inside, it still goes on. You know, you got to get those seats. You see couples, new couples, they're standing in the aisle going, do you like the aisle generally, or would you prefer? Do you generally like to sit? Forget about it. People are diving over seats. It's like the fall of Saigon in there. You can't get through that. You can't be choosy. You got to walk in. The way to do it is you grab the first two seats you find. You see two empty seats, grab them. That's your fallback position. You got it. You got something. Now, one of you guards those seats. The other one goes up into the front. Got to do it. It's like a reconnaissance mission. One of you, see if you can come up with anything better, a better position. So then you see one chair with a jacket on it, and you got to bother the guy. Excuse me, is that seat taken? Because you don't know. He could be saving it. It could be dating his clothes. You don't know. So you got to ask him, and for some reason, I'm always the 100th person to annoy this guy. Go, excuse me, is that seat taken? Yeah, one time. Sometimes see a guy with two coats. Sometimes see a guy, you know, just a jacket, a coat, pants, shirt, socks, underwear, just an entire row of clothes. In the end, there's a naked guy going, yes, they're all coming back. We're a high school group. I underdress. Do you mind? Keep moving. So then you find the seats, and then this is the worst part. One of you has to go for popcorn. I do this. I don't mind. I happily go for popcorn. It's just the lowest moment in life. When you get the popcorn, you have all this stuff in your arms. You come back. The lights are down. You're squinting in the dark. You're walking around. You just lost. You're 5 years ago. Honey, sweetheart, honey. Bump into other guys. Sweetheart, honey. I can't. And all you hear is men going, honey, and women whispering men's names loudly. Stu, Mitch, honey, sweetheart. You're like the schmuck of the universe. You're just walking around, sweetheart, honey, Mitch. You have to, again, grab the first seat you can find. Sit next to a stranger. Look, Mitch is not coming back, all right? It's me. Deal with me. I'm a guy. I got popcorn. This is as good as it gets. Thanks very much.
Here you are. You're going, well, I guess I'll just stay home and watch porno movies.
Okay.
But why, if these are supposed to be movies, there's supposed to be something exciting, but why is they have to have people that look like they've just taken two Valium? No! Why does it always have to be someone going, oh, you know you want it, I've got it for you, baby. You know I've got a hunk of steaming love, and there's always some girl going, oh yes, yes, I really do want it. No, it doesn't get you excited, that's why! You must have real actors! Wouldn't it be nice if a Shakespearean actor did a porno movie? Then you would have real love! Then you could look out and say, yes, yes, I need you now. I will part you like the Red Sea and drive you to China. There! Pray forth your golden orbs! I shall dial now, mounting you like Kilimanjaro! My mighty steed thrust forth from the stable of my joy! Behold, now cry God and King Harry! Good night!
Comic Relief was historic not only because of how much money they raised for charity, but also because they reunited Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. And we'll be having 3 weeks of a show about Peter Cook coming up starting next week. And here is that reunion.
Miss Rigby, Stella, my love, would you send in the next auditioner, please? Ah.
How do you do? Nice to see you. Mr. Spigot, is it not?
Yes, Spigot's the name, acting's my game.
Right, yes. You'd just settle down for one moment?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Spigot, you are auditioning, are you not, for the role of Tarzan?
Right.
Mr. Spigot, I couldn't help noticing almost immediately that you are a one-legged man.
Oh, you noticed that.
When you've been in the business as long as I have, Mr. Spigot, you get to notice these little things almost instinctively.
Yeah, of course.
Now, Mr. Spigot, you, a one-legged man, are applying for the role of Tarzan.
Right.
A role traditionally associated with a two-legged artiste.
Right.
And yet you, a unidexter, are applying for the role.
Right, yes.
A role for which two legs would seem to be the minimum requirement. Well, Mr. Spigot, need I point out with overmuch emphasis where your deficiency lies as regards landing the role?
Yes, I think you ought to.
Perhaps I ought.
Yes.
Yes. Need I say with overmuch emphasis that it is in the leg department that you are deficient?
The leg department?
The leg department, Mr. Spigot.
Yes,
yes, you are deficient in the leg department to the tune of one. Your right leg, I like. Ah. Oh, it's a lovely leg for the role. As soon as I saw it come in, I said, hello. What a lovely leg for the role. I've got nothing against your right leg.
Ah.
The trouble is, neither have you. You fall down on the left.
Yeah, it is inadequate.
It is inadequate, Mr. Spigot.
Yes.
And in my view, the public is not yeti, is not yeti already for the sight of a one-legged Tarzan swinging through the jungly tendrils shouting, hello, Jane.
No, right, right.
But don't despair. I mean, after all, you score over a man with no legs at all.
Oh. I've got twice as much.
Twice as many, yes. You score by 100%.
Yeah, so there's still hope.
Of course there is still hope, Mr. Spigot. Yeah. I mean, if we get no two-legged character actors in here within, say, the next 18 months, there is every chance that you, a unidexter, will be the very type of person we shall be attempting to contact telephonically. Oh. I'm just sorry I can't be more definite.
Oh.
You must understand, with the state of the business today,
oh,
what with the dollar sliding and all
you.
That money tied
Good
up...
Lord, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank
you. We really can't afford to do everything. Thank you so much. Stella? Oh, is Stella with you still?
Oh, they are wonderful. Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. I refuse to switch the billing the way it is on the label here. It is Peter Cook and Dudley Moore with the piece called One Leg Too Few. It's also not called The Audition, as they have it here on the record. But if you're interested in helping out Comic Relief, the number to call is 1-800-528-1000. I believe that's 24 hours a day, as long as there are homeless people in the world. Also of interest is at the Odyssey. Paul Krasner is going to be there for a while. Call the Odyssey if you're interested in that. He's always a lot of fun. And for the next 3 weeks, Peter Cook of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. I did a long conversation with him, and I have been editing this, it seems, for years. I've been putting this thing together, and it's supposed to be ready by next week. So by next week, tune in and see if I have finally finished. And also, see if you can spot any of the over 500 edits in this show. But for the next 3 weeks, it's wonderful. We take up Beyond the Fringe and Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, discuss the whole ball of wax, and it should be a lot of fun. I apologize to you for not telling you how wonderful Tanner 88 was, because I just caught up with it. I just watched them all on tape, and if HBO decides to rerun them, you don't want to miss it. It really was quite terrific by Gary Trudeau and Robert Altman. Anyhow, I'm out of here. See you next week with Peter Cook. Thanks for listening. Until next week, don't forget to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Right, Eric?